We are now on the director's report, number four, Director Susewin.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter. And as agenda, director's update, as well as including current status on COVID-19. And as you all well know, Deputy Windrop has been doing the lead on that. And since it's highlighted in the agenda, we thought we'd start with that for a quick intro, and then I'll move on to the normal director's report.
Okay, great. Thanks, Director Susewin. So I wanted to give a quick update on the COVID components of how we're dealing with it at the agency. I want to say that, you know, we are really entering the next phase of, it seems like there's endless phases, but this is sort of the next phase of the COVID experience. And we're starting to see an increase in places across the country. We are ticking up very slowly in Washington. We're not seeing the same spikes they're seeing elsewhere. As a community, you know, we are focused on this, not just, of course, at the Department of Fish and Wildlife, but in all state agencies and across the state. And we're really entering sort of a new phase psychologically, which is sort of what we're thinking about. There has been studies about how communities and individuals respond to disasters from a behavioral mental health standpoint. And they've been tracking, you know, the emotional response of folks through these studies. And what they've learned is that there's this honeymoon phase where there's a disaster and people sort of band together, and we made sourdough starter and things were sort of, we were coming together and we were going to get through it together. And where we are now is that it's just going on a really, really long time, and people's emotional well-being is starting to dip. And they call this the period of disillusionment. And this is where people are starting to struggle in their lives. And of course, as people struggle in their lives, they begin to struggle at work. And so our focus is sort of twofold. One is a recommitment collectively to the safety, the physical health safety of staff, and then a commitment to their mental health as we sort of continue through this event, and that we support connecting staff and supporting the connections between staff, because that's what the behavioral scientists say is sort of the most important thing for us to do now. So the other piece, of course, so there's the mental health piece, then there's the safety piece. And in that recommitment to the safety protocols, one of the big risks that we face as an agency is that when people get COVID, they get it in their work unit. And when that happens, we have 2 weeks of people quarantining, we have people getting sick, not being able to come back to work, and it affects work units. And so, you know, a work area or a place, a physical place in the landscape, a hatchery, an enforcement division, a lab, everybody in that then has to be quarantined and or is sick. And so it really does impact our business. And so focusing with staff on making sure that we're following our safety protocols, that we're wearing our masks, we're staying socially distant, we're doing good hand hygiene is going to be our recommitment. So we are seeing folks getting COVID at work, and it is really concerning. So that's sort of our next phase, is this two piece of recommitment to people's following of the standard operating procedures to make sure they don't get it, reinforcing that with supervisors and with staff. And the other piece is building more support for folks' mental well-being as we struggle as a community forward. So that's it, Director.
Commissioner Carpenter, if I may, I just wanted to compliment the work that Deputy Director Winthrop has put into this whole program, certainly breaking new ground. And I recently virtually attended a Region 1 meeting that was their annual awards meeting. And the staff there was very complimentary of how Amy has maintained this program and kept our regions up to date. And I wanted to extend another thank you to Amy for amazing work, really, in this during this very unusual period, and conducting the business of the agency. So thank you. It was nice to hear that the regions appreciate your work, as we all do.
Thank you, Commissioner Grabo. I assume Amy must have sent you some of her sourdough starter. Amy, good work indeed. Thank you. Did you have anything else, Amy, or we go back to the director?
Back to the director.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter and Amy. I'll go into kind of the more standard report now and do my best to not influence the period of disillusionment any further than I have to. Short on what we normally have been calling the lightning round, it'll be a little less lightning this time, but I'll tell you a little bit about what we've been doing around the agency, including very limited travel. We had our agency award ceremony. That this is the broad ceremony for the agency as a whole. Commissioner Graybill talked about that. We each have a regional ceremony more specific. I bring that up because coming later on the agenda, we normally take on some of our citizen awards and internal awards there and given this year we did it remotely, we thought it'd be appropriate to bring that to this group. We did a hearing at the House RDAN, Rural Development, Agricultural, and Natural Resources Committee. Ron Warren provided an update on status of CARES Act to that group. Kelly Cunningham, Eric Gardner, and myself, the real interest of that committee was to understand the process that we went through in deciding when or if to close our lands and seasons and the process that we used to then turn around and get those lands back open and our seasons back open. I would say it went fairly well, very few questions. So I don't know if it's just their first opportunity to get together and it was their first experience with a rural committee meeting or that we covered all the bases, but I think it went pretty well. We had a virtual public meeting in Region 3. This was in partnership with Rocky Mountain Elk and Forterra talking about acquisition of a property. As you all recall, we've been doing these regional town halls throughout the state. Previously, they've been sort of just an update on agency activities and then primarily question and answers. We're taking a little bit of a new format on that where we take a specific topic in each region. In Region 3, it was the acquisition of the Vanwick property as part of the Cowichi and the partnerships that are necessary to make that kind of acquisition helpful or possible and kind of what we achieved through it with connectivity and other things. So I think it was a very successful, I think, open house. And it's along that model, next Tuesday, we do Region 5, where again, we'll have at least about half of that time spent for a question and answer to the public. But the focus there will be pinniped management on the Columbia, and that will be next Tuesday.
Kelly, if I could interrupt for a moment, could you turn your video off? We have some commissioners that are not hearing you well. Could you try that?
You bet. I will take no offense to that. I would ask me to turn it off too. Okay. The next on our list was, I've mentioned it before, but the work with the governor's office and tribal leaders on the state riparian strategy is continuing. We've had a number of meetings. This week was a meeting with the leadership of both state agencies and tribes. So this comes from a commitment last year's Centennial Accord by the governor, recognizing the value of our riparian areas is probably the critical land we most need to manage in order to preserve, protect, and perpetuate wildlife, a commitment to get the state family aligned and to work with tribes to figure out what's our process for doing that. A number of issues have come to the top. How do we use our existing authority? Do we need new authority? How do we monitor it and know if we're making progress? Because that's one of the challenges with our no net loss to date, because are we really achieving it or not? And then how do we encourage and improve and enhance incentive opportunities for good management? Those are all on the table. No decisions yet, but the hope is that the work will continue and we'll have some work moving forward that can be in a governor's budget and or legislation if necessary. We just this week, for really the first time for a long time that I've left the office on work other than just going home and back, had a meeting in Davenport, requested originally by Representative Tom Dent, met with producers there, Washington Cattlemen's Association, Cattle Producers of Washington as well. And Representative Dent was unable to attend. And so Senator Warnock took over. Great communication with those locals. I think it follows well on that. We heard loud and clear some of the issues we heard earlier today in discussion of our strategic plan. And it really was a commitment to continue working with folks. And so great, great opportunity. Commissioner Franz was there as well from DNR. With me was Tom McBride and Cynthia, because it was really around lands in general and fire and grazing were the primary topics. Moving on to some issues just to make sure you're aware of, Wild Washington Lessons for Educators and Parents. This was an interest that you all have had for us, ask us to include a budget request for this. I want to highlight that we have that process, those services are now available. If you go to our website right now, the current module is on bats. It's really pretty interesting and fun. And so I just wanted to let you know that we're following through on your desires to make sure that's happening. And I think it's a great successful effort. My next topic is a mixed one. My original notes were to remind you all of the abundant razor clams we have this year, the best population assessment we've had in decades. We've got a number of digs planned. And then 2 days ago, we got to shut down our first dig as a result of domoic acid. So right now, the clams remain abundant. We're evaluating the trends. We'll make a decision next week and try to get those seasons back open as soon as we can. They're a great outlet in the time of COVID. You can dig with social distancing. So we're worked hard to get through that COVID, over that COVID hurdle. And now we've got to make sure we stay above the domoic acid hurdle. Certainly hope we can do that because it's a great opportunity. We've got a great available population this year, best ever. Commercial whale watching. We had our public hearing this Monday on the SEPA draft EIS. Comments through today. We had done a previous comment on some rules, kind of a pre-draft rule exploration that helped us finalize a rule package to go out. That rule package has two options in it that were really developed through that previous effort. An option A that allows whale watching in the July through September, 7 days a week, two-hour periods a day, three vessels at once. I'll really flash through the details. Limit of three boats at a time, I just described. We, because of the input we received before, also included an option B, which would add shoulder seasons on both ends of that, where you could do a Saturday, Sunday opportunity, less time, less boats. And then during the central core summer months, it would be a Friday through Monday effort rather than a 7 day a week effort. So a couple of ways to distribute the pressure around the whales. And that, I'll make sure I'm looking at my notes here. It's the Comet Cradian's November 13th on those rules. We're scheduled to be back in front of you in December for an update and briefing, and hopefully a decision scheduled for December 18th. On those rules. Both options include the no-go zone on the west side of San Juan Island for commercial whale watching boats. That's just the commercial fleet. And want to emphasize that this is really around southern resident killer whales. It doesn't impact the fleet as they watch rays, minkies, or transient whales, other whales. This is really restricted to the southern resident that we're concerned about. Other issues I think you've probably heard about that I wanted to give you an update on. Bighorn sheep is the first one. We've got some challenges with a couple of our herds. So we have 17 herds in the state with about 1,700 animals in round numbers throughout the state. As you know well, the bighorns are susceptible to pneumonia through a bacteria. And we have two herds that we were concerned about. The first is Quillamine herd. It's about 220 to 250 animals. We had a report from an off-duty sheriff that he witnessed a domestic ewe in amongst a group of wild rams, which caused us concern. We took action. We ended up euthanizing that domestic ewe, testing her, and she was positive for the bacteria that causes the pneumonia. It's common in domestic sheep. It doesn't cause problems in domestic sheep. It's generally fatal to incredibly damaging to wild populations. As a result of that, this was in the Quillamine herd again. This is in the Ginkgo National Petrified Forest. And so we went out, we removed 12 sheep, 9 rams, 3 ewes, tested those sheep. They were all negative. So right now we're feeling that we may have dodged the bullet there, but we're going to continue. We also observed the sheep there to make sure that we weren't seeing other signs of sickness. And right now our plan is just to continue monitoring that group and hope for the best. But we think we're in okay shape with the Quillamine herd. Clement Heard, a little different story there. We found about this report from a hunter. He had a ram tag. He was hunting and saw what he thought were sick, a couple of sick lambs. We investigated, found a dead lamb, tested that lamb, and then it was positive for the bacteria. And so we also tested that hunter collected a ram that was negative. But we know now that there is the bacteria is in the herd. And so we're evaluating options. Options are pretty limited. It's another good sized herd, about 250 animals, 250 to 300 animals. So not a lot of options. Our plan there, again, is to just monitor and track the animals. The nearest herd, it's a big herd. It's difficult to do a population reduction in a herd that size and don't know if you're getting the right animals or not. The nearest herd that could be impacted is the Yakima Canyon herd, and we already have the bacteria in that herd as well. We're waiting on the results of a strain analysis to see if we can tell if it's the same strain of bacteria in the two herds while we further consider further efforts. One thing we are considering that be good to get your input on is at times like these, we think it would be good to reduce the herd or at least it provides some opportunity. It doesn't make a significant reduction in numbers, but we might want to offer some additional ram hunts for the next tier down of people who put in for the special permits and weren't drawn because it's an opportunity that may, those rams may be going away anyway, so it may be a time to at least seize a little opportunity. We will continue to monitor any sheep we can there and determine whether or not there's further action necessary. So I'm going to pause on that one for a moment.
Commissioner Thorburn.
Thanks, Kelly. Your audio is better with your video off. That was the, okay. The only reason for the request. I have lots of thoughts and kind of questions. When we, talk about season setting, we receive reports on management of our big game species. And I know there's always a lot of effort with our sheep herds to manage them as well as we can to keep them separated from exposure to domestic flocks. We put a lot of effort into that. I'll deal with the idea of increased opportunity in a minute, but the question I have is, the exposed herd was one that we were able to grow because there was not thought to be a lot of opportunity for domestic sheep to interact with this particular herd, and yet it happened. And the media and many of our constituents are pointing out that this ewe was a long ways from any place that there should be grazing of domestic animals, and that's how we were managing that particular herd. So my question is, what is our thinking about that? I know this is a challenge throughout the West in managing bighorn sheep. It seems to me that each time we've had a presentation on the management, this has been one of the huge focus areas, is how we try to manage these sheep and keep them away from domestic animals. And yet it happened, and it was a long ways from where the ewe should have been. So that's my question. Would be very amenable to having staff bring ideas about using hunting for management of this situation that's arisen in the second herd. So anyway, thank you.
So responding a little bit to that, what I want to make sure we have the clarity there, and I hope I didn't mess it up in my original discussion. So the Quilamine herd is the herd where the you're right, was in a place where it really shouldn't have been. That we've got all negative tests in there. So where we have the positive test was in the Clemens herd. You're right as well. It's a concern throughout the West. We're working with producers, big producers that actually have allotments. We're working with trying to work with small producers who don't really realize the threat that the domestic disease poses in the wild population. We're working with the Department, the Forest Service, to try to figure out to make sure that they can exercise their grazing allotments in a way that helps us maintain the greatest distance. And there's been many efforts to update those grazing policies to ensure that. It requires a NEPA analysis. It seems to be fits and starts. And right now we're in a fit, I guess. We're in a stall pattern, but we are continuing to work with Forest Service. We've had a good relationship with them generally and trying to put additional effort there to just make sure that we can manage in a way that keeps that separation.
Thank you. That answered my question.
Sorry. Didn't mean to cut you off there. A last issue that I was going to just update, because we're hearing a lot of energy around it, I'll say it that way, is around the Blue Mountain elk herd and some hunting being portrayed as poaching going on, particularly in our own land on the 4-0 ranch. And so we are working closely with the Nez Perce tribe. The Nez Perce are hunting that area, and they are removing, we think it's been between 20 and 35 bull elk and about 5 cow elk. We believe this is consistent with the treaty right to hunt open and unclaimed lands. And so we're trying to work with the tribe to address that. A lot of folks think that the poaching, first, the element that we saw catch a lot of energy on social media was a wastage issue. Tribes are with us on not wasting this resource. Our enforcement is working with tribal enforcement very well to investigate instances where it's misbehavior. That's different than the tribe hunting within what we believe is their treaty right. And so we're working with the tribe to make sure we try to get to a point where we're managing collectively. I skipping the word co-manager, the hunting right is in a different part of the treaty. Co-manager is what we generally call all of our exercise with tribes on managing fish and wildlife. It's really a term specific to USV Washington. But we're working, so we're reaching out directly to the tribe. I think you'll see some changes in our three-year package around our hunting seasons in that area. And so I want to let you know, it's an unfortunate situation. That's a highly sought after area. It's a draw only entry for us. It's a hard tag to draw. It's really one of our most sought after areas. That's not really all compatible with tribes going in and taking large numbers of bulls with better access in different seasons. That said, this is the kind of thing we're facing throughout the state with tribal hunting. We have a meeting coming up November 3rd with tribes. I think it's the 3rd. I'll double check the date to talk about not just hunting in ceded areas, but in traditional hunting areas. That's the next layer within the tribal treaty reserved right. So I wanted you to know that we are paying attention to it. We are working with the tribe. It's not a poaching issue. It's a management issue that we need to get more concurrent with the tribe on.
Commissioner Anderson, did you have a question, sir?
Yeah, I do. I guess the 4-0 was purchased by the department. When was that?
I do roughly? Not know the date, sir. I can get that for you. I don't know the date.
It was over a number of years, ending in 2014.
It's recent.
So there's been different purchases, and it's added to it, I suppose. My question is, so when it was in private, it was probably closed. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Any kind of hunting, but by permission, fees, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So Commissioner Lindell yesterday in the Wildlife Committee asked for a briefing that we'll provide probably early next calendar year on tribal hunting. So we, our view on this, with extensive work from our counselors at the Attorney General's office, the treaty reserves the right to hunt on open and claimed unclaimed land. And our view is, if it's public property, state-owned property that's managed in a way that's consistent with hunting, that's open and unclaimed for the purposes of the treaties. We're hearing a lot that Oregon is not treating it that way, that Oregon feels that once it's been in private ownership, that makes it no longer open and unclaimed. We don't know how, you know, I'm not an attorney. I should say our attorneys tell us that they don't see how that could possibly stand up in court. They don't think that's really the way the treaty works. So, but we're going to check into that and see if something like that works for the tribe. Again, this is really a matter of collaborating with the tribe and making sure that we're managing in a way that suits both the tribe and state interest. But yeah, for us, if it's in private ground, privately owned, that's not open and unclaimed. And there's a distinction under industrial timber that we'll probably cover in the briefing. I'd choose to skip over it now unless you want more info on that.
I would look forward to that briefing, but my point also was that when it was in private lands, that was not necessarily available maybe to non-treaty hunters as much as it would be under state ownership.
Yeah, it would be just like any other private ground. It's up to the landowner whether they allow access to it or not. I think here, yeah, the previous owner did allow that carefully, but I'm going to get out over my skis if I go further than that. Yes, there's definitely it's private property. You need the landowner's permission to be out there hunting previously. As state property, we manage it either in ways where you can hunt it or we have reserves where you can't. Similar on federal property, there's federal property, you know, the national parks are generally considered managed in the way not consistent with hunting, so we don't consider those open. But if it's publicly owned and it's managed in a way consistent with hunting, then we consider that open and unclaimed.
Got it. Thank you.
Commissioner Graybill?
Yes, thank you. Kelly, there's also a similar issue came up again this year in regard to the Clackam tribe and the Clackam area, and regarding hunting by the Yakima tribe. And I did talk to Mike at a Region 3 office, and again there's accusations of waste and over harvest, and I just wanted to make sure that your November 3rd meeting would have the Yakima tribe in attendance, if you could confirm that.
Well, they will certainly be invited. I'm not sure whether they'll attend or not. And I want to, so we did have an issue there. It was particularly in the Coffin Reserve for that herd, an area that we don't hunt, and the tribe was hunting. And so we've reached out to their tribe to understand how we can, again, jointly manage that as well. On the biological side, our biologist on the Southeast Washington, this is not a population problem at this point in time. Continuing removing a bunch of big bulls, it could become a successful breeding problem. But right now, we're not seeing it. It's more as an equity and an accessibility and fairness issue right now, and co-management issue, as opposed to a biological problem at this point in time. I would say the same on the Coffin Reserve. That's an area we don't hunt because we try to give those bulls that area for a rest. And we just have to continue working with the tribe. I just got a text that the Yakima tribe is planning to attend the November meeting.
Okay, Kelly, is that a wrap, or do you have other information to share?
I think I'll call that a wrap.
Okay, Commissioner Thorburn's hand is up.
Thank you. Kelly, thanks for the report. Very informative. I heard about the Lincoln County meeting, and I'm sort of getting filtered information. I just would ask in the future if I could be informed about those meetings. I would love to be a fly on the wall listening. So in my region, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, I apologize for that. It was an oversight on our part, on my part.
Okay. Kelly, thank you for a good report. Much appreciated.